You must hear your name first. You are Kunta Kinte, son of Amora and Binta Kinte, grandson of Kaida Bakunta Kinte and Yaisa. You must always honor your ancestors, the ones who love you and watch over you. Your name is your spirit. Your name is your shield.
Allahu Akbar!
Behold, Kunta Kinte, the only thing that is greater than you.
That's a scene from the new version of the 1977 television series Roots. A newborn Kunta Kinte is held aloft by his father in the Mandinka village of Dufra in Gambia. And this is where the family live a quite idyllic life until Kunta Kinte, at 17, is stolen by slavers, chained and taken by ship to America. There, he's sold to a plantation owner in Virginia.
What's that? Your words are hobble bubble to me, African. You just had your first lesson in how things work. All these fancy Virginia gentlemen, they don't understand you. But I do. You can't buy a slave. You got to make a slave.
This remake of Roots has had a big Australian input. The first of the four parts is directed by Philip Noyce and the last by Bruce Beresford. Now, you'll know Bruce's work. He won an Oscar for Driving Miss Daisy. I caught up with Bruce recently and asked him to tell us how this update of Roots came to be.
Well, the producer of Roots, the instigator of it, is a very nice man called Mark Wolper, whose father produced the original Roots. And then Mark was showing the original one day to his teenage sons, and the teenage sons were rather scathing about it. And then Mark said to himself, this has got to be redone. We've got to do it for another generation.
Because that was a really groundbreaking series. I mean, it opened people's eyes.
Oh, it did. I mean, it just showed you what they went through in America, which was pretty horrific for a pretty long time. And, of course, it was the first time that there'd been black actors in major roles in American television.
And they went on to do amazing things, a lot of those actors. So what about the decision to make it now in the current context? What was some of the discussion that was had around that?
Well, it was only that Mark thought that the thing should be updated for a contemporary audience because he realised that people, say, under 40 knew nothing whatever about it. So there was a whole new audience there who'd never seen the original Roots, who knew very little of black history in America, who knew very little of slavery and all the things that had happened. I mean, it's part of the whole fabric of the country. It's a story that a lot of people feel should be told.
And in the context of the Black Lives Matter protest, it seems more timely than ever. It's still very much a part of not just the political discourse, but the person-to-person, the face-to-face.
It definitely is. I mean, it means a tremendous amount to African Americans. I mean, filming some of the scenes in my episode, I often found the cast were crying.
Mm.
You know, there were things happening in the drama and, you know, children wrenched and sold off to other plantations, and the actors would all burst into tears.
It's one thing to read about it or to hear about it, but another to see it or even enact it as they were.
Yes, of course, the actors knew it was part of their, we know what happened to their forebears, and they found it very moving.
Yeah, it's still very present, isn't it? Now, as you say, you directed one of four of the four-part series. What was the part that you were given?
Well, the whole series covers a few hundred years from the beginning of slavery in Africa, which was that section was directed by Philip Noyce, another Australian, brilliant. And then it goes through a few hundred years. My part was the final section, which takes place pretty well entirely during the Civil War. Which is like 1860, around that era. And it ends at the end of the Civil War. That's as far as it goes.
Right. So massive crowd scenes, I imagine. Well, where was it shot and what were some of the challenges?
Well, my section was filmed, in fact, all of the sections except Philip Noyce's, which that was done in Africa, in South Africa. All the other sections were done in Louisiana.
What was that like? I mean, Louisiana is...
Well, Louisiana is fascinating. I don't really think it was the best place to shoot it. It would have been better in Georgia. But Louisiana is really flat and swampy and it's very hot. But it's New Orleans is a fabulous city, but of course this series was not in New Orleans. We stayed in New Orleans. But because it's the whole state really is very flat, I said to the producer, look, how do I do this battle scene, which took place in the hills? We had to travel over 100 miles every day to find some hills where we could shoot the battle. It was quite a logistical problem, the whole thing.
And what's changed from the original miniseries that many people will know quite well?
Well, I have never seen the original miniseries. I have no idea.
Very wise decision to make. Yes, I mean, I guess that's what people often do, avoid. Yeah, yeah. And what do you think about, I mean, we're seeing so much amazing Indigenous Australian material being produced for our screens at the moment. Do you think that we could be ready for something of this epic scale?
Well, there's been some very good films done in the last 10 years or so with predominantly Aboriginal casts and with Aboriginal stories. I suppose, you know, there's always been room for more. There's certainly been some very striking ones.
And when you're directing a film that has such a profound heart to it, what are the things that you use as a director to draw that out? I mean, how do you make an atmosphere?
Well, we had a very good set designer, so we had, you know, we conjured up the period very well. But I had to do a lot of research. You know, I read a lot of diaries of slaves and slave owners. I read up on the history, photographs. There were a surprising number of photographs because my story, which took place in the middle of the 19th century, was along with the birth of photography. So there were a huge amount of photographs. You could see exactly what people looked like and where they lived and what the inside of their houses were like and everything. Mm. So I did a lot, you know, read everything I could find and looked at all the pictures I could see in order to make it as authentic as possible. And then luckily for me, the network let me cast most of the leading roles. So I auditioned a lot of young, mostly young African-American actors and got some really terrific actors.
Was there one guiding kind of idea that you were following? I mean, the casual brutality of slavery is something that always strikes me in photographs, that like the ones you're talking about. Was there a central idea or metaphor that you were working with?
Well, there's a lot of brutality in the series. I mean, that was something the networks really wanted played up. They kept saying, oh, it should be more gory. Can't there be, like I have a scene in it where they hang one of the black slaves. And it's very hard to watch. It's very disturbing. But then the network said, oh, have him hanging longer. And, you know, I found all that a little unnerving. You know, it was pretty horrific as it was.
Mm.
There were aspects of the slavery that they never touched. Like one of the things I found out when I researched it was that a lot of the plantations never weren't all that bad. I mean, a lot of them were terrible. But at the end of the Civil War, a number of the Southerners went to live in Brazil with their slaves. They all went, and they're still there. And every year they have a get-together. They don't speak English anymore. They all speak Portuguese. But they're still there and they have a get-together every year. They just had one about 2 weeks ago. And it's interesting, these days they're all black because the white slave owners married their own slaves. But, of course, that didn't happen with the majority. I mean, once the slavery ended, I have a scene in my film where they declare that slavery's over, the Civil War's over, and we have a celebration scene, which is one of the best scenes in my sequence.
Mm. Just finally, Bruce Beresford, we're seeing so many films getting translated into television adaptations and television is ascendant. How do you see it from your long perspective of looking at film?
Well, television in the last maybe 10 years, television's got to become, the writing's become much more sophisticated. And I think that producers, writers realise that they have an adult audience, perhaps a better educated audience, while a lot of the feature films, not all, but the big money in feature films is really spent on action movies and remakes. The sort of things that certainly I mostly, well, some of them are fine, but I find that that those television series are of more interest to me and probably to a lot of people.
Mm, richer and more complex and able to have big emotional arcs over longer time frames.
Yes, I mean, sometimes I think sitting down to watch a series like, I did watch Breaking Bad, which I think was something like 54 episodes, and at the end of it I thought, well, it's wonderful, but I don't think I'm going to do that again. I think it's too much time.
Yeah. What about this then, Bruce? They say that the reason television has been so successful is because of the rise of the showrunner. And now that the film industry is seeing the success of television, film directors are coming over. And the theory is that the directors will wreck it all.
I don't think the directors are going to wreck it all. That's not going to happen. There's been some very, very fine directors. I mean, a number of director friends of mine have done very, very good television episodes.
Mm. And that's where the heat is, you reckon?
Yes, because they appreciate the more sophisticated writing.
Mm. Bruce, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
That was director Bruce Beresford talking to me recently about his role in directing one of four parts of a remake of the television series Roots, which begins on SBS on Wednesday night. And I couldn't help slipping in a question or two about Bruce's views on the changing nature of television. Well, joining us now is Matthew Delmont, Professor of History at Arizona State University. He's the author of several books about race issues, Why Busing Failed, The Nicest Kids in Town and Black Quotidian. He's also just released a book called Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. It's the first book-length study of Roots. Matthew, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, it's really quite impossible, really, to overstate the impact of the original series of Roots. Tell us about how, in your words, it captivated a nation.
Well, in the US, it was really unlike anything anyone had ever seen. So African-American history had been studied at the university level, but this brought it into the mainstream of American culture. When Alex Haley released the book through Doubleday in 1976, it immediately went to the top of the bestseller list, sold millions of copies. ABC broadcast it within the United States in January of 1977. It was the most watched television miniseries of all time in the United States. Over 100 million people watched it. And then it went international. It went to Australia, it went to dozens of other countries. So millions and millions of people were captivated by the story, both within the U.S. and internationally. And what was important about it was that it told African-American history at a mainstream level in a way that people had just never seen before. And it told it through a specific family story. And that was really powerful.
So what was going on at the time for it to have such an impact? And as we now see it as a really significant cultural event. Why? What was going on?
So 1976 is the bicentennial in the United States. So partly people were thinking about the history of the United States. And part of that was trying to reckon with the history of race in the United States, much in the same way we're still trying to reckon with that now. It came after the end of the mainstream civil rights movement, so some of the racial tensions had died down in the U.S., but people were still trying to grapple with what does it mean to have these lingering racial issues, lingering inequality, and trying to make sense of how our nation is going to live together. And it really attracted people across racial and ethnic lines in the United States because it told a story about family and about becoming American in a way that just fascinated people. And I think it did it in a way that didn't shy away from some of the more frustrating and difficult aspects of American history. So it didn't shy away from the fact that America was a country that was built through slavery, that African Americans who became citizens of the United States did so by fighting for their freedom, by working to build the country. And that's something that has never really fully been reckoned with in U.S. history. And to have it be something that was showing up in people's living rooms via television and on their nightstands, the books they're reading, was just a unique moment in American cultural history.
So really just confronting this, well, maybe willful ignorance or something darker, maybe suppression of this story, this shameful part of history.
Exactly. What a lot of people don't realize is the most watched TV series in the United States before Roots was Gone with the Wind. They aired the 1939 film over two nights in 1976 on NBC. And at the time, that was the most watched thing on television. I think that says something because it's a very romantic version of the history of the United States that really pushes the experience of African Americans to the background. So it presents benevolent slaveholders and happy slaves, and that nothing could really be further from the truth, but it's that kind of romantic vision that our country has clung to, and Roots helped to start push back against that.
Oh, isn't that a fascinating contrast? Now, the book and the series played a part in African Americans reclaiming their ancestral heritage. It's been said that Alex Haley kind of showed people that their ancestry was in fact traceable. Is that the case?
It is. So genealogy up until the 1970s had been something that only people who were from elite families or from families that had some sort of claim to nobility felt like they could undertake. The 1970s saw this shift to it being something that average or ordinary Americans could take part of, whether they're African American or Italian American or Irish American. So Alex Haley really helped to bring attention to genealogy as something that all Americans and really all people could take seriously as a hobby and as more, something that could sort of help nourish their sense of how their family came to be, how it came to be in America, how it came to be from all these different parts of the world. Particularly for African Americans, that was an important story to tell because it's a story that had been lost or purposefully hidden from them. Part of the trauma of the Middle Passage, the transport of African Americans from Africa to the New World, was that it ruptured these family stories. And Alex Haley, through a mix of fact and fiction, was trying to reclaim and recapture and repair those gaps and erasures. And that was tremendously powerful at emotional levels for African Americans.
Well, of course, there are resonances on that point for Indigenous Australians, as well as African slaves who were in Australia at the beginning of this colony. And it's, you know, something that the British were particularly good at, separating people from their past. But the credibility of Roots became muddied quite quickly. There were accusations against Haley of plagiarism and also shoddy research. Tell us about that.
Well, it's one of the things that motivated me to write the book. So one of the interesting things for me as a scholar is, despite the fact that Roots had this huge cultural impact in the 1970s, there hasn't been a book written about it. And one of the reasons scholars have shied away from it is exactly what you're pointing to. The book became controversial, really for two reasons. There were debates that came out about the relationship between fact and fiction in Haley's story. So both Doubleday and ABC marketed the story as nonfiction, but in fact, Haley in his own telling said that he mixed fact and fiction, and as more details came out, it was clear that he was telling a fictionalized version that drew on historical artifacts. I think he could have been more clear about that, and one of the things I try to do in the book is really piece together how he came to put together the story he told. I think Haley's great skill was that he was a storyteller. And I think the reason it captivated people so much is that he told an amazing story about history and about African-American history, and that's what people responded to. And it's in some ways unfortunate that people got hung up too much on the relationship between fact and fiction when he was going for a very kind of old-fashioned, great narrative, great epic storytelling. The other controversy was about plagiarism. So Haley did have to pay $650,000 to a white author named Harold Corlander because he was found guilty in court, settled out of court for a plagiarism suit for Corlander's book called The African. And again, I think that has taken a lot of credibility away from Roots as a work of history. But I think it shouldn't deter us from understanding the cultural importance of the work. I think people responded to it because it was an amazing story, because it helped them understand their country, their family, and their place in the world. And I don't think the plagiarism suit did much to change how people related to the book, but has made scholars shy away from it.
Yeah, and this is a great cost, isn't it? Because you quote Jesse Jackson speaking at Alex Haley's funeral in 1992, and he says, "He lit up the long night of slavery. He gave our grandparents personhood. He gave roots to the rootless." And that kind of really encapsulates the power of this story and the way it connected with people who really didn't feel they had roots.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that I think we do need to keep talking about Roots. I'm glad that they made a new version of it. Because I think the power of that story is it forces us to reckon with the messiness of history. And I think it's the plagiarism is part of it, the relationship between fact and fiction is part of it. But the larger part is that people desperately want to understand how our nation and our world came to be, and part of that is slavery. Part of it's the endurance of African Americans to survive that institution. And I think that the book is a powerful window that allows us to have those conversations.
On Life Matters, we're talking with Matthew Delmont. He's a professor of history at Arizona State University, and he's just released a book called Making Roots, A Nation Captivated, which is about this book by Alex Haley, Roots, which has twice been made into a miniseries. Let's talk about this remake of it, Matt. The critical reviews of the History Channel remake have been mixed, but largely positive. How's it been received in the contemporary context of race relations and the Black Lives Matter movement?
So the reviews were largely positive that I saw here in the US. What I liked about the series is they built it as a reimagining of Roots, and I think they really did that. They didn't stick too faithfully to the original version. They added in new stories, new subplots, and they re-envisioned some of the iconic scenes. Like, my favorite for me was there's an iconic scene of Kunta Kinte being held up to the stars and saying, "Behold, the only thing greater than yourself." That recurs throughout the series. I think it recurs four different times, and there's a different sort of tone to it each time. I think that registers powerfully thinking about the birth of these African-American characters, particularly when they're born into slavery. They're literally someone else's property. That resonates powerfully right now when we think about the Black Lives Matter movement, and it's, again, a moment in which we're trying to grapple with what does it mean for African-Americans to strive to be first-class citizens in the United States and to strive to have equality. And I think Roots can help us understand a couple of things. Help us understand how long African Americans have been in the United States, and then how long and how fraught that experience has been. That this question of full equality for African Americans has never come easily. It's always been something that's been fought over, and it wasn't different in 1976 when Roots was initially published and broadcast, and it's still ongoing today, unfortunately.
Snoop Dogg, the rapper and actor, made some characteristically high-octane remarks on Instagram around Memorial Day, May 30, when the first episode was due to air in the US. Let's hear what he said, and a warning to listeners, it's a very strong opinion, but it's also loaded with some very strong language.
No disrespect, but I can't watch no motherfucking more black movies where niggas getting dogged out, 12 years a slave, Roots, Underground. I can't watch none of that shit. Sick of this shit. How the fuck they gonna put Roots on Memorial Day? They gonna just keep beating that shit in our heads of how they did us, huh? I mean, I don't understand America. They just wanna just keep showing the abuse that we took hundreds and hundreds of years ago. But guess what? We taking the same abuse. Think about that part. When y'all gonna make a motherfucking series about the success that black folks is having? The only success we have is Roots and 12 years of slave and shit like that, huh? Yo, I ain't watching that shit, and I advise you motherfuckers that's real niggas like myself, them television shows. Let's create our own shit based on the day, how we live and how we inspire people today. Black is what's real. That old shit.
He certainly got a unique way of communicating. But Matthew Delmont, what exactly is Snoop Dogg saying there, that these high-profile portrayals of slavery are themselves a kind of white hijacking of black narratives and, by extension, a continuation of that oppression?
Well, I think he's combining two points that often get mixed up. So on the first point, this claim that there are too many films about slavery, this is something that I hear from students sometimes, hear something when I present this work publicly. If you look at the numbers, it's just not true. You can point to 12 Years a Slave, Django Unchained, Underground, and now Roots. But if you look at the numbers of the last decade plus, the proportion of African-American depictions in film and television are not about slavery. So that just it doesn't bear weight. The second part of the claim, though, I think wanting more, a wider variety of African-American representations, the fact that African-Americans are underrepresented on U.S. film and television, that part is true. So I would go along with the sense that, you know, there are a lot of great stories about African-American history that don't have to be about slavery. You can think about Ida B. Wells or Rosa Parks, or even stories that aren't about civil rights in any way. Think about debutantes or fashion pageants or great businessmen and businesswomen. Those are things that we would like to see more of in film and television. But I think to blame Roots or blame these stories that are about slavery, that's something that we have to grapple with as a nation. The correlation isn't exact, but we would never stop talking about the Holocaust. We never should stop talking about that. For, in the American context, slavery is the same way. We can never stop talking about that, never stop trying to understand how our nation emerged from this horrible institution. So I think I would disagree with Snoop on the importance of Roots.
I guess there's a fine line between telling a story of truth and utter brutality and well, mere misery porn. Was Snoop Dogg's response common at all? Was that wide, or was he a sort of outlier?
If I had to give a percentage to it following the Twitter commentary, I think it was about 10 or 15%. And I think what's interesting is I collected a bunch of the letters to the editor from the original Roots, and you saw the same sets of responses among African-Americans at the time. So there's always going to be some percentage of African-Americans who don't ever want to see this represented on film and television. And I can't fault people for that. It's a horrible thing to see people treated in this way, and then to have to imagine this is someone that your something that your ancestors have experienced a few generations ago. I can't fault people for not wanting to see that. But as a historian, I think I have a different relationship to this material that I think it's hard for us to deal or to reckon with this in any meaningful way if we can't understand that these images, as brutal as they are part of our nation's history.
Mm. You must have thought history was repeating, in fact, because you've documented in your book how these similar accusations were levelled at not just Alex Haley himself, but the TV network ABC and Doubleday, the publisher. And you write that people were upset with how they seemed to be wringing money out of the history of slavery, and that it was an explicit commercialisation in many people's eyes.
Yeah, I think this was one of the things that fascinated me once I actually got into the archive and started reading the transcripts and reading the letters in the decade before the work came to the fore, so between Alex Haley and David Wolper, who was the producer of Roots, that everyone invested in it wanted to profit from it. So even Alex Haley himself, he had an emotional investment in the story, but he also had an economic investment. He was talking about making sweatshirts and coasters and different ways you could monetize Roots. And I think it is uncomfortable. So I think there is a very fine line between the educational value of this work and how it can fuel and give depth to our public conversations, and the fact that these things don't come to broadcast or be published unless someone's going to make money from them. And that's a very fine line to walk. I think both Roots Productions, the 77 version and the new version, they're on the right side of that line. I think they're doing good educational information work while also producing profits for large multinational corporations.
Yeah, I wonder how many times that accusation is levelled at, for example, the makers of films and stories about the Civil War, probably not as often. Matthew Delmont, thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure.
That's Matthew Delmont. He's a professor of history at Arizona State University. His book, Making Roots, A Nation Captivated, the first book-length study of Roots, has just been published, and you can find it online. I should mention that as well as airing on SBS starting this Wednesday, the new version of Roots will also air on NITV, National Indigenous TV, with many historical parallels between the experience here and in the US.